It is finally here. The postseason is days away. We know the Bruins' first round opponent. Up until game 82, it could have been one of two teams, but the games leading up to that, it could have been a handful of teams. We now know the Boston Bruins are facing off against the Toronto Maple Leafs in round one. Opening shifts, initial thoughts. Let's get right into it.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't my opening shift, but I just woke up this morning just so excited. Like last night was like a little chaotic. Like there was Jack Edwards announcing his retirement, which I know we're going to touch on at some point. Yeah. And, you know, a bunch of stuff came out of Montgomery's pregame. And then like just kind of a crap game from the Bruins until the third period. And you're kind of like, all right, like whatever. It's finally the season. But then I woke up this morning. It's like it's playoff hockey. Like this. Like who cares what happened the last two games of the season? This is it. This is the best time of the year. My opening shift is now that we are here. I am rotating goalies at least the first two games. That's how I think the Bruins.
Breaking news. Scott thinks they're gonna rotate.
I think they're gonna, and I think they should. I feel like that's how it's been setting up. They rotated all the way right to the end. Never made any effort to give one goalie 2, 3, 4 starts in a row. I've said it before, but Montgomery seemed to hint that they would not rotate to the end and then ride one guy like they did last year. So, yeah, I think at least the first two games you split, and because there's still a debate about who starts game one that we can get into, I will say I'm still going Ullmark because I think he's been the better goalie for the last 2 months. But I do also understand the argument for Swayman because he got the two big wins over Toronto early in March, started both those games, gave up one goal in each of them. Swayman had the better final start of the regular season, if we care about that. He was nails against Washington Monday night. Ullmark, I thought, was a little off Tuesday night against Ottawa. But I would go Ullmark game one, Swayman game two, and evaluate from there.
Hey, Bridget, what am I doing right now?
Keeping your mouth shut. Because we'll talk about it again later. And I can't wait for... So we're going to record Sunday Skate with Razor after game one.
We're doing 2 hours of who starts game two.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's going to be 2 hours of which goalie should start game two.
If I tell Razor we're doing that, what do you think his reaction? Would he just turn right around and walk out?
He's not going to come in.
So I'm telling you guys right now, this is part of a Brian pact that for my own sanity, I will not be discussing the goaltending situation all playoffs. I'm going to leave that to everybody else. I'm just going to sit back, relax, put my feet up, and watch the madness. I've said my piece, and from here on out, not a word from me. Not a word.
Are you just going to go with the flow?
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to watch it. Yeah.
I'm going to mark this down.
Yeah.
And absolutely. By game three, when someone sucks, he's going to be like, you need to go back to Swayman.
Nope. I'm not even going to entertain it. I'm just going to watch it all unfold. I'll let the other goalie experts out there, you know.
Everyone's a goalie expert in this town.
Everyone's a goalie expert. So it's a hot topic, and I got nothing left to say. Let the playoffs begin. Let the games begin.
Okay, well, I do have thoughts on it, but we will save that for later. Scott never changed his opinion on this. Actually, this has been Scott's opinion the whole time, but, I got to give props to Scott. This isn't my opening shift, but, I got to give props to Scott for being a true journalist yesterday. What did Scott do in the pregame? He asked Montgomery about the two things he said, don't ask me about. He asked him, is there an update on Brazo? Is he still week to week? And he gave Scott a very short yes, week to week. And then he said, and what about the goalie situation? And he was just like, we have two good goalies.
I didn't ask about the goalie situation.
I thought it was you that followed up. Someone followed up with a question about the goalies. It was journalism. That's what I was witnessing pregame. It was asking Monty the things he didn't want anyone to ask him about. But obviously we need to know. So,
well, if it was Scott, it was journalism. If it was potentially other people, Bridget would have said it was annoying. So it just depends on who was asking the question.
It does. No. That's only one specific person, but, so I'll get to my opening shift, and mine has to do with this every season, the biggest concern that most teams have is, are we healthy heading into the playoffs? So I want to just kind of set up what the Bruins are dealing with health-wise, what might be, who might have some concerns and who's trending in the right direction or who looks good. So Brazo, obviously we didn't get the update. He's week to week. He could be a big asset if he comes back, but it doesn't look like that's going to be soon. It's definitely not going to be for game one. So Brazo, we can pretty confidently say, though not confirmed, that he will not be playing game one. In fact, week to week is a designation that I told you already I don't like. It could mean he's not even back for a first round series. So anyway, we haven't seen any positive signs about Brazo being able to come in, at least not in the first week of the playoffs. So Forbert is playing in Providence. He hasn't played yet, though, right? I think he's playing this weekend. So he's certainly someone that it was not on people's radar that he was going to have a chance to make it back in the playoffs. And now he's playing in the AHL, which is really, really only a short step away from coming back. And we can give our opinions about whether or not he should crack the lineup, like what that might look like. But he might actually be an option at some point during the playoffs. Brendan Carlo didn't play the last game. Pat Maroon didn't play the last game. They said both of those were maintenance/rest. They got the two games out of Maroon that they wanted. They didn't think that he needed to play the last game of the regular season against Ottawa. I can't tell whether or not I'm concerned about that. And then Carlo is really the one that if you lose him, you're in trouble. But the update for Monty pregame was just maintenance. Hopefully that is not BS for the Bruins' sake, because they need Carlo for a playoff run. He's going to be really important.
A couple of days ago, or maybe it was yesterday, actually, on Twitter, we put out a poll that had a good amount of feedback. Basically, it was asking, who do fans prefer the Bruins play in the first round, Tampa Bay or Toronto? At the time, those are the two options. Obviously, since then, we now know it's Toronto. And 60% of voters were in favor of playing the Maple Leafs in the first round over Tampa Bay. And I would be one of those people as well. I think the Toronto matchup is favorable to the Bruins over Tampa in certain aspects, though we're going to dive into everything and maybe it isn't so obvious that that's the case. But in any event, I was one of those individuals who kind of took a little bit of a, because the Bruins might be Toronto's boogeyman, but Tampa is Boston's boogeyman. And so for those reasons, it's a good thing. But my opening shift is, it's a caution to the wind to fans and to the Bruins, which is not that the Bruins would do this, but for fans, don't rely on history. Don't think that this is going to be a sure thing Boston playoff series win, because the Bruins beat them 11 years ago and the Bruins beat them 6 years ago and 5 years ago, whatever it's been, because right now the Bruins only have seven players remaining from the last time they played, which is McAvoy, Marchand, Pasternak, DeBrusk, Carlo, and Grizzlick. And Toronto only has five players remaining from the last time they played, which is their core four, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, and then Morgan Riley. So there's a lot of individuals, including and the head coaches are different. There's no Mike Babcock. There's no Bruce Cassidy. There's not a lot remaining from the last time these teams played. So the whole aura of Boston versus Toronto, most of the individuals taking part in this playoff series have nothing to do with the past. No Maple Leafs outside of those guys I just mentioned have any memory of losing to the Bruins in the playoffs, and no Bruins, aside from the ones I mentioned, have any memory of beating the Leafs in the playoffs. I think this year's playoff series is interesting, because I think, and we'll get to predictions later on in the podcast, but I think this is the best version, the most complete version of the Toronto Maple Leafs that the Bruins have seen in the playoffs of the last 11 years. I think that Toronto still has the offense they posed in prior series, but I think they're bigger and stronger and tougher. than any of the Leafs teams we've seen in the last 10 years in the playoffs against Boston. And on the flip side, I think that this is probably on paper the weakest Bruins team that we've seen go up against Toronto in a playoff series. With that said, it took the Bruins 7 games the prior 3 times to beat Toronto. So I don't understand where everybody thinks is going to be an easy cakewalk of a series for Boston, but that's my opening shift, is just not to rely on history here. There's a lot of analytics numbers we'll get into that support that.
Yeah, there's no Nazem Kadri to get suspended and ruin the series for Toronto this time. He is long gone. He did do that in both 2018 and 2019, if people remember.
Yeah, I know, but Toronto fans remember.
Yeah. But those are, like, you know, you talk about it's only a handful of guys on each team, but those are the core guys. Like, those are the guys you lean on in the series. So that DNA, like, for those guys is still there. And I think with Toronto, it's not just like their history against the Bruins. It's also series that have happened between 2019 and now, where they choked against Columbus in the bubble, and then they choked against the Canadiens the next year in the all-Canadian division season that they should have really cakewalked through, because they were the only good Canadian team that year, and they still choked in the first round. And then they blew a 3-2 lead to the Lightning the next year. And then they finally get over the hump against the Lightning in the first round last year, but then get blown out by the Panthers in 5 games. So, you know, that stuff is all real. And, like, you don't have to go deep into Toronto media to find it. It's, you know, the questions and the criticism of that core in Toronto is front and center and very much still present. And, you know, for good reason. Like, some of those core guys up there have really struggled in the playoffs. That second round series against Florida last year, Austin Matthews, 0 goals. John Tavares, 0 goals. Mitch Marner, I think, had 1. William Nylander was the only one who even kind of showed up. Like, that, and this playoff series before that where you can look at those guys being quiet. So I do understand the, hey, give me Toronto, because that's, you know, they choke in the playoffs every year. But as we're going to get into, I do agree with Brian that, like, this is a different, stronger Toronto team that presents a lot of challenges and absolutely should not be taken lightly.
Yeah, I think there's recency bias in, to answer your question about why people might be so confident that the Bruins can beat Toronto in this series. It has to do with the regular season statistics and what the Bruins were able to do. Sweeping a 4-game regular season series with Toronto seems pretty impressive, considering the season that Austin Matthews is having, and it was a 97-point season for Nylander, and Marner had 85 points. Like, this is a team with good offensive firepower that the Bruins, like you mentioned, Swayman held them to 1 goal in those last 2 games of the regular season series. So you're looking at what the Bruins did. They put up 4 goals in each of the last 3 games against Toronto. So you watched Boston's offense be able to break down some of the flaws or expose some of the flaws that Toronto has on defense in net. So that's why, even though you look at Toronto on paper and you look at what they've been able to do individually this season, and you know, they're always going to be a tough team in the playoffs to beat for anyone. I know that they haven't won a lot of series, but they still, it's like, you don't even know how they haven't won those, because they've been good. I think that a lot of the confidence among Boston fans comes from watching them beat them in close games, right? The first 2 games they played was a shootout win, which obviously there's no shootout in the playoffs, but. And then the second one of the season was a 4-3 overtime win where Marchand came up with a clutch goal. And I think there's confidence that Boston's clutch players can be clutch in the playoffs, whereas Toronto's best players aren't necessarily clutch in the playoffs. So you feel like the Bruins might get an edge in that category. And that their goaltending is an edge. And those are two really important things. So that's where I think confidence comes from among the Boston fan base.
Okay, so let me start off with a simple question here, because again, there's a lot to get into, but let's just simple question. Maybe this helps when we break up the episode into segments, Bridget. Bridget and Scott, who has the best player in the series? Boston or Toronto?
Toronto.
Boston.
Austin Matthews is a 200-foot unicorn. Like his offensive dominance and goal scoring ability, the elite shot to score from distance, as well as the drive and willingness to get to the net front. Only Zach Hyman had more high danger chances than Austin Matthews this season. And Hyman's getting those because Connor McDavid's setting him up for him. Austin Matthews gets those because he creates them himself and he goes to those areas. He's also a very good defensive center. He's going to get Selke Trophy votes this year. He's gotten Selke Trophy votes in past seasons. I love David Pastrnak. He is a superstar as well, but Austin Matthews' total game to me elevates him above Pastrnak.
I was being a little facetious because Pastrnak's a great player, but Austin Matthews, like you said, makes, not that Pastrnak doesn't, but more frequently Austin Matthews can make something out of nothing. And set himself up and always seems to get that bounce and have the puck and go to the right areas of the ice. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see who in the playoffs performs better, because in the past, and I know there's been a narrative that is, you know, you can prove it wrong pretty quickly that Pastrnak is not a good playoff performer. Austin Matthews is going to have to be good. He's going to have to be the best player in the series if Toronto wants to win, I think. I think they're going to have to rely on him. And where he's really dangerous and where I don't like to see him set up is when he's got all that time and space on the power play. I mean, he's someone you do not want to see with a puck on a stick on the power play, but he's going to have it a lot because that's one of their best looks, one of their best scoring options. So take that away from him. Don't take so many penalties and don't give him so much time and space.
I'm more worried about him 5-on-5, honestly. Like he's an absolute freak at 5-on-5. That their power play, like the Bruins, has actually been awful down the stretch. Like that. Now there was also a stretch earlier this season when I think it was like a 15 game stretch where they were 50% or like something insane. So obviously they are capable of that. But they've also really struggled on the power play down the stretch. Matthews, though, 51 even strength goals this year. That's the most since Teemu Selanne in 92-93. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's – look, we can be the biggest David Pastrnak fans in the world. I think to not call a centerman with 70 goals in the season, not the best player in a series is a little bit disingenuous. I also think that Matthew's ability to create something out of nothing, like you mentioned, Bridget, is it's not that Pastrnak can't or doesn't. I just think, I mean, you're talking about two of the best goal scorers in the world, quite frankly. So I think Matthews, but to Bridget, to your statement about Matthews having to be Toronto's best player, I actually think Toronto's better off. I think I like Toronto's chances of winning a series better if Matthews doesn't perform versus Pastrnak not performing, based on the at least offensively, based on the supporting cast. I mean, if Matthews goes quiet, and what's quiet for Matthews? Maybe 5 points in 7 games or something like that. If he goes quiet, okay, Toronto has Nylander, Marner, Tavares, you know, Bertuzzi, the others to potentially get that secondary scoring. If Pastrnak goes quiet, you're really leaning on Marchand and then Coyle and Zacha and who? DeBrusker. It's a little bit more, there's a little bit more of a leash, I think, there for Matthews beyond Matthews offensively. But okay, so that's the best player in the series. So
by the way, sorry, Brian, before you move on, we should note for people listening, we're recording this Wednesday afternoon. Toronto does actually have one more game left Wednesday night. So he had 69 goals going in. So if you're listening, you will know if he got to 70 or not.
Right.
But either way, even 69 would be the most since Mario Lemieux in 95-96. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Do the Bruins have the best defenseman in the series? Do they have the two best defensemen in the series? Is Morgan Rielly sandwiched between McAvoy and Lindholm, or is Lindholm better than Rielly, would you say? Because again, Toronto, if you're analyzing the series, no one's going to convince anybody that the Bruins have a better offensive lineup top to bottom than Toronto. Toronto has the edge offensively. Where the Bruins are going to win this series is a lot of areas, but they're going to have their best defenseman be the best defenseman because defensively the Bruins are better than Toronto in net and on the blue line. So again, I ask, just to reset it, do the Bruins have the two best defensemen in the series?
As in McAvoy, Lindholm?
Mm-hmm.
I think you could argue that.
I think when Lindholm is at his best, I would take him over Rielly. But if we're talking about who had a better season this year, I would have to say Rielly. Just he does have 58 points. Like that's really good. Can't ignore that. Rielly is not very good defensively. There's no question about it. Like you can expose him. Lindholm, even in a down offensive season, you know, for the most part has played pretty good defense. So different kinds of players. I push comes to shove, I'd rather have Hampus Lindholm, but Rielly's had a better season. I think.
I'm sorry, guys. I meant to ask if the Bruins have the top three defensemen. I forgot about Wotherspoon.
I thought you were gonna say new PP1 quarterback Kevin Shattenkirk.
Right.
Which we will get to beginning to that as well. But
yeah.
So I would say, and what I thought your question was more about was like defensively, was like that side of the puck.
Yeah, I guess just overall as a player. But
maybe overall makes it different. Obviously, there's a huge difference between point numbers in Morgan Rielly and Hampus Lindholm. But defensively, I like Lindholm better. Defensively, I like Carlo better. Overall player, obviously, offense from Rielly this season has really contributed to success. So, two different answers for depending on what you mean for that.
Right. That's fair. Okay. So now we can start to get into it a little bit more analytically. I think maybe the best way to ask this to you guys, we can kind of go from here, is what would you label the key to the series? Maybe for both teams, but if you want to keep it to the Bruins, I suppose, what's the key to the series for the Bruins here heading into game one?
Slowing down Austin Matthews. You're not going to shut him down. If you do, it might be a short series. That would be fantastic. But slowing him down, just finding a way to somehow limit his chances, keep him off the scoreboard. Don't let him take over the series. So whether that's defensively matching up against him or getting big saves from your goalies, Matthews scored a little over 23% of all of Toronto's goals this season. The highest percentage of any one player to his team by quite a bit. So yes, there are obviously other weapons. If even if you do keep them quiet, we mentioned them, Marner, Nylander, John Tavares, you know, not what he was in his prime, but still a very good player. But so much of what they do centers around Matthews. And, you know, I looked over the games this year, looked at how the Bruins matched up, and everyone kind of saw Matthews a little bit. Like, they didn't stick strictly to matchups, but the one matchup that stood out to me in terms of someone who did well against them was Brandon Carlo. When Carlo went up against Matthews this year, it was about 31 minutes of 5-on-5 ice time. Shots were even. Goals were 1-1. Scoring chances were even. And the Bruins actually had an 8-3 advantage in high danger chances. When Brandon Carlo was on the ice against Austin Matthews, the Bruins really did a good job of limiting his high danger chances. So I would look for that matchup, especially on home ice early in the series. I think you'll probably see a lot of the Marchand coil DeBrusque line against Matthews as well. That's the Bruins' strongest defensive line. So again, you're not going to completely keep him off the board. He's going to get his chances, but doing as much as you can to limit them.
Yeah, that Marchand matchup is what they go to against offensive, like forward wise is what they go to. The good news for the Bruins too, as long as Carlo's healthy, like we talked about, he left the second to last game, didn't come back, and then didn't play against Ottawa. So there's a little bit of concern there about his health. They said Montgomery, like I said, if it's all honest, it was just maintenance. But that's why I say if you're missing Carlo, it's such a huge loss. But the good news is, let's just assume that it's true. It's just a maintenance day. Carlo's in game one. Carlo's healthy for the series. There's a lot of different defensive partners you could go to for Carlo in terms of shutting down Matthews. Like we've seen Lindholm Carlo. We've seen Weatherspoon Carlo. We've seen, and obviously we don't know about Lauri's availability. We've seen Lauri Carlo. But I feel like the two best options there, if you're not, which we do think that Lindholm McAvoy probably is the starting top pair, but
I disagree.
You think they're going to go back to Lindholm Carlo to shut down?
Yeah. In this matchup specifically, I'd put Carlo with Lindholm and match them up against the Matthews line.
That is the most logical or like defensive strategy if you're trying to really cover your bases with Matthews. I think Montgomery said something about this earlier in the season. He played a short bench. I know at least one of those Toronto games because it's all about covering the top nine, like the top six, really. Like you want to use your best personnel against them. And so Lindholm Carlo is that shutdown pair the Bruins were using most of the season. They went away from it over the last, say, like two and a half weeks, but it's a good shutdown pair. And I don't know what the numbers are for Weatherspoon Carlo. That was something we saw a little bit of. Weatherspoon brings something completely different than Lindholm does. So, and then that brings up the question: is it, you go back to Grzelcyk McAvoy as the quote unquote top pair?
Well, I think that's definitely what they would do. And where it gets interesting is because I agree with Scott's philosophy where you should probably split up McAvoy and Lindholm. By the way, McAvoy sidebar, but he needs to, you know, flip that switch pretty quickly in the playoffs because I don't think he's been playing his greatest hockey, to say the least, as of late. But when McAvoy is going, when Lindholm's going, I think it's best to split them up to have one of them on the ice against Toronto's depth. I mean high-end depth. Lindholm with Carlo, Grzelcyk with McAvoy. But then now you have a question, right? Do you want to go with peak Weatherspoon as the third D pair, which we all have vocalized. We like that pair, especially if they were to play a Tampa or a Florida series at some point or a Carolina series. It's a little bit heavier and nastier. But if you go peak Weatherspoon, where does Kevin Shattenkirk figure in? Because the top power play unit, McAvoy's been struggling. Shattenkirk's making it cook a little bit. So I could potentially see a scenario where maybe Weatherspoon is a healthy scratch to start, or where so that Shattenkirk can get that power play time, or maybe Monty gives McAvoy a new lease on life. It's the postseason. Get it in gear now, or else game two, Shaddy's coming in, and maybe he keeps that peak Weatherspoon pair for game one. I don't know. What would you guys do? How would you line up your top six to start this series?
I think I put Grzelcyk with McAvoy because there's a comfort level there. They've had some better games, obviously not recently because we saw a lot of McAvoy Lindholm, but prior to that, I thought Grzelcyk had started to turn a corner. I wouldn't have an especially long leash there. Like if Grizzlick struggles, then I could be okay with taking him out of the lineup as early as game two, but I would start that way. And then I would have Weatherspoon out to start, and I would have Shattenkirk in with Peak, which I think has also been a pretty good pairing. It's not obviously not as defensively stout as Weatherspoon and Peak together, but the reason I have Shattenkirk in there is I am starting the series with him as my quarterback on the top power play unit. That looked so much better Tuesday night than anything we have seen from the Bruins top power play unit in, I don't know, a month and a half. Like the top unit had been so slow and stationary and not getting shots through and not getting PKs moving. And then you put Shattenkirk back there in one game, two power plays, you see so much better movement and shots getting through and a goal. And it's like, oh, okay. Like this actually isn't all that complicated. You know, you just had guys out there who were overcomplicating it, and Shattenkirk doesn't. He is very kind of simplified, straightforward, just consistently makes the right play and like gets, you know, it's not like he's like running around crazy out there on the power play. It's just subtle movement that gets people moving and opens up shooting lanes or passing lanes. He has a pretty good connection with Pastrnak too. So that to me works. And, you know, the Leafs penalty kill has struggled all year. So you like that can be a difference maker in this series. I'm not taking any chances. I'm going with what to me looked good most recently, and that is having Shattenkirk there.
Yeah, he's a quicker playmaker up at the point than McAvoy, because like you said, it looked like McAvoy might have been overthinking, all right, taking his time a little bit to decide what the pass was, whereas Shattenkirk was kind of just reacting to what he saw, like bang, bang, I see Pastrnak's open at this exact moment, I'm going to just tap pass it over there. It moved faster because I think at least facilitating when the puck came to him, he was just making the quick read and moving the puck there. And I think it helped. My question's to both of you, but because Scott, you mentioned a short leash for Grizzlick. If you take Grizzlick out, but you want to keep the Lindholm-Carlo pair, what do you do with McAvoy at that point? It's not an option, really.
I'll give it a shot. I'll try it. No.
You're going to go in for we want the McLaughlin-McAvoy pair?
Yeah, I can simplify. No, if you do that, you probably have to put Lindholm back with McAvoy. I don't think anything else really makes all that much sense. You know, unless Lauri was coming back and you put him there. But obviously, he's going to get called back up first. So we'll see if that happens.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you're probably putting Lindholm with him and then going Weatherspoon Carlo, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, something to think about.
I just want to make a quick correction on something I said earlier. There's 8 players remaining from the Bruins from their last playoff series, not 7. I forgot about Heinen, probably because he was traded and bounced around a couple of times, so he hasn't been here the whole time since then, but he is technically a player that was in that 19 series that is back with the Bruins.